Welcome to the business podcast of the American Chamber of Commerce in Australia. AmCham Business Podcasts are hosted by Dr. Duff Watkins. Duff is the director of Exec Search International, an author, and is also on the AmCham Council of Governors. AmCham, bringing business to you.
Hello and welcome to the business podcast of the American Chamber of Commerce in Australia, AmCham, bringing business to you. We live in disruptive times, so today we'll discuss leadership in disruptive times. You'll learn how the leading companies deal with disruption. You'll hear how the large companies are working with the small companies and even startups to deal with disruption innovatively. And you'll learn what industries, what sectors, what technologies are most likely to be disrupted. My name is Duff Watkins. I'm the host of the AmCham Business Podcast. And our guest today is Nick Abrahams, partner with the law firm Norton Rose Fulbright. Good day, Nick. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Duff.
Nick is one of Australia's go-to guys for all technology issues. He's a lawyer, advisor, non-executive director, former dot-com entrepreneur and investor. He's worked in major law firms in Australia and Tokyo. He's also worked in Hollywood, which nobody knows about. He's a genuine all-around hell of a guy, and he's with us here today. So, Nick, I want to ask you about your new book.
Yeah.
The title of it is Digital Disruption in Australia, but basically it's a guide. Actually, what I really want to ask you about is, has it sold out? I've emailed you with numerous requests to give me a copy. I'm good for it. I'll buy it. Cash if you want. Just tell me how I get my hands on this book, because it's, I need to know. So what's it about?
Yeah. So, the idea was to, for the first time ever, take information about what was happening with disruption in Australia and put it out there for everyone to read. So what I did was to analyse 550 M&A investment and IPO transactions in Australian tech over the last 5 years and look for where there was clustering around particular disruptive themes. And so from that, we saw a number of key areas where Australian businesses are facing disruption.
Why did you focus on Australia? My guess, by the way, is that because most companies regard Australia as a test market and things happen here first.
Yeah, I think because a lot of the literature, in fact, all of the literature is largely American focused. And if you want to read about what's happening with Tesla, if you want to read about what's happening with Google, and there's plenty of literature out there about that. And indeed, if you look at disruptive theory and what's happening with disruption, you can read about that more from the point of view of, well, we know that we'll have driverless cars in 2020. So there's a lot of sort of futurist sort of stuff going on there. My approach was to look at the empirical data and say, can we look at M&A transactions as a proxy for how a company's trying to innovate by acquisition?
So can I ask you, what does disruption mean to you? It's a word we hear a lot, and I think it means many things to many people.
I've had many conversations about this. People say, well, disruption, isn't that just innovation? And we've always had innovation. I agree, we've always had innovation, and it's always been up to boards and companies, CEOs, to drive innovation in products and services. But what disruption brings is it's a step significantly in excess of normal incremental innovation. So you are looking at, in some cases, disruption can pose existential threats to organisations. And you look what's happened to the Australian media company landscape and, you know, looking at the way that, say, you know, realestate.com, car sales and Seek really attacked the revenues of Fairfax to say that, well, that was disruption because there was more than just having your existing competitors come and attack part of your market. You saw a lot of revenue go out the door. So disruption is really about a step change in the way that business is done, and that your competitors are no longer who you think your competitors may have been. So the banks always used to think their competitors were the other banks, but they now know it's Apple, it's Google, it's those players.
So what are the leading companies do? This disruption is not going away. It affects everybody. It's real. It's here. There's more coming. So what do leading companies do?
Yeah, so I developed an analytics tool to help companies understand what to do with disruptive innovation. I call it the innovation dating game. So if you look at traditional organizations, you can say, okay, we can do innovation ourselves. And some companies are good at that. So Commonwealth Bank has actually been very impressive in this regard. Many companies have decided, though, that they need to work with fast growth companies, with true innovators outside of their organization. So they do that, one, because that organization has an innovation DNA that the large corporate may not have. And also, what's critical, and many organisations have realised this, is that you can't build everything yourself these days. You need to work with the ecosystem. You need to have a platform upon which other people can build. And so what I see from working people through the innovation dating game is that many large corporates go immediately to this idea of, we will invest in or we will buy an innovative company. And there is just, based on the 550 transactions I looked at, there is an awful lot of roadkill along that particular highway. So before actually going to that idea of some sort of equity participation, I see companies now going on a journey. And so the first part of that journey for any large corporate is you need to establish that you are an organisation that values innovation. And that might seem axiomatic, but it's not for many organisations. So you look at companies that are now there, they're setting up innovation groups within their organisation. They're setting up structures so that people are allowed to fail, not something which is traditionally well regarded in large corporates. And in fact, I make the observation that the most dangerous position in any company is the head of innovation, because you will fail 80% of the time, which is often a slippery slope to the exit door. We see them sponsoring co-working spaces, we see them sponsoring hackathons. So the first part is to set up an innovation culture within the organisation. So Westpac put $50 million into ReInventure, their venture fund. You've got Telstra Ventures, you've got AMP Ventures. So a number of NAB's just announced its venture group. You start with that internally. So you get your culture right. Because the reality is, if you want to work with a really great startup or fast growth company, chances are they don't want to work with you. Because traditionally, if you're a smaller company working with a larger corporate, there is the potential there for that larger corporate to kill you. And that's either by governance, or you just get too close to them as a channel and you start to develop for them. So the innovative companies are looking very warily at working with large corporates. So they look for a corporate that has a true understanding of innovation and ability to work with innovative companies. And so from then, I've worked on a number of structures that large corporates can use to do that working with smaller companies.
So you're making I think it's an interesting point that some companies talk a lot about innovation, but they don't necessarily walk that talk. Everybody talks about innovation, but as I like to say, hit the mute button and watch what they do. That'll tell you everything you need to know. And you make the interesting point that 80% of innovations will probably fail, so a company has to have a pretty high tolerance for failure if they're going to deal with disruption successfully. Now, so you're telling me, if I understand it correctly, these large companies are actually working with smaller companies and even startups to capture the innovation solution?
Yeah. So basically, if you look at it from a large corporate's point of view, why do they want to work with the early stage companies? And it really boils down to one of two reasons. Because that innovator has a product or service that the large corporate would like to have and bundle with its particular service to make it stickier to its existing customer base. Or the second reason is the innovator is able to access a market that the large corporate is not able to access. So it's a distribution platform. There is a third one, which is to gain an economic benefit from an investment in that startup, but that is an absolute gamble, the idea that you could make one or two investments in early stage companies and hope that they come home. That's behaving like a venture capitalist and not where large corporates, I think, should be dabbling.
As an example, GE acquired an Australian company last week. Is that an example of what you're talking about?
GE is a fantastic example. That is a great transaction. And GE has thought that through well. It makes sense for GE to use that technology with its existing product suite globally. So it is, that was a perfect example. That business was a slightly more mature business more mature than a startup for sure, but very, very solid business. So that I would see as an example of using great technology, which GE can then bundle with its other technology to roll out globally.
GE is into everything. I mean, they're everywhere. So, and disruption, no one is immune from disruption. So can you give me a clue, what industries, what sectors, what technologies are most likely to be affected by this disruption?
In Australia, certainly financial services. 2.5 years ago, we didn't have the term fintech. Now Australia has over 200 fintech startups. And interestingly about that is it boils down to a few key areas. Peer-to-peer lending, so that's become very hot and, you know, arguably could take a couple of percentage points off the big banks, but that's no existential threat to the big banks. You've got what's known as robo-advice. So that is moving from the traditional financial planner, human financial planner model, to using a computer. That has the potential to massively disrupt the superannuation industry, the distribution models that have been used there over a long period of time. Then you've got things like data analytics, so good opportunities there, and then blockchain. And the fascinating thing about blockchain, which is the underlying technology for Bitcoin, is that blockchain was widely touted as something that could actually cripple the banks. In fact, what will happen with blockchain is that it's just a magnificent piece of technology which will end up being used by the big banks to rip enormous amounts of expenses out of their back end. So I think we'll see, if you're in financial services, you know, a lot happening there. In health, massive disruption in health across, you know, just a wide variety of areas. So seeing specialised medicine based on, you know, DNA scanning so that you're taking, you know, medicines that are right for you rather than for the broad section of the population, you know, the ability to grow organs. Players like Telstra have been very, very busy in buying and investing in e-health businesses and trying to bring those together as Telstra recognises that it needs to move up from just being an engineering and connectivity company to being a services and content business, which is why e-health is such an area. And then the final one would be professional services. So PwC says that the traditional accountant will not have a job in 10 to 15 years. And so if you look at professional services, they've been buying new companies or buying, you know, different sorts of businesses quite a lot. And indeed, the company that I'm an investor in, Lawpath, which is an online legal disruptor, just last week did a joint venture with a global law firm, my law firm, as it happens, Norton Rose Fulbright, using Lawpath's technology to enable Norton Rose Fulbright to access the small and medium business market, which traditionally it would have struggled to access without that tech.
Mate, I don't even know what blockchain is. And you're telling me it's going to change my life, and therein lies the problem. This stuff is happening whether you're aware of it or not. So first of all, tell me what blockchain is and I'll just take a few notes here.
So blockchain is just a distributed database. So just think of it as rather than having your contacts database sitting on your computer or on your server at work, your contacts database in fact just sits on 10,000 servers around the world. So it's available at any time, and it's identical in every server around the world. So what blockchain then gives you is the fact that once something is written to the blockchain, it can't be changed unless you can commandeer more than 50% of the servers that hold that information. So it's highly secure, sort of more secure than, you know, your information stored within one bank, because it sits out there, so you have to actually hack all of, or at least 51%. And it creates, finally, a digital bearer instrument. So the problem that we've always had with digital and digital transactions is if I send you a PDF of a document, I keep that document and I give you a copy. And that's traditionally where digital has always been. It's like, well, you can make infinite copies and that works fine for many things, but it doesn't work when you've got a store of value. So what blockchain does is it says that if I give you a store of value, it could be a Bitcoin, you know, it could be any form of cryptocurrency, but I give you that, and what blockchain does is it makes sure that there's only one of those in existence at any time. So you can therefore be comfortable that you've got that. So some examples of what's happening with blockchain around the world. So the Australian Securities Exchange is the leading project right at the moment in blockchain. So they are looking at using blockchain technology to replace the CHESS system. If you do a trade on the ASX these days, it's T+3 for settlement. That's coming down to T+2. But under blockchain, that could be T+5, 8 seconds, something like that. So you're looking at real-time settlement. NASDAQ has a blockchain project where private companies can be traded on the blockchain. So traditionally, if I wanted to buy some shares in your company and it's not listed, then we'd have to have a shareholders agreement, share certificates and exchange. It's a highly manual process. Whereas with blockchain, it would just be, you would just, you know, send me a line of code and we would have done the exchange. We're seeing countries in Africa putting their land title systems on blockchain. Anything that requires a third party to verify something will be massively revolutionized by blockchain.
Okay, well, you've already exceeded the boundaries of my imagination. So let me ask about this. Okay, I'm a CEO. I'm a general manager. I'm a manager. I'm a boss. And how do I help my company respond to this disruption? Because actually, well, not just respond, but survive. Because there are going to be winners and losers in this. And a lot of what you're saying is freaking me out anyway. So I'm a boss. What do I need to do to learn to help my company, my employer, survive these changing, turbulent times?
Yeah. So I think it certainly starts at the board, if you like. So the board has to be open to what's happening with innovation and disruption. And boards now have to look further into the future as to where businesses are headed to. So strategy becomes very significant. So I think, you know, there's an opportunity there to really be fully apprised of what's happening. These solutions can rise so fast. I mean, what's happened with blockchain over the last 2 years has just been massive. So I think it's really a heightened awareness of the competitive landscape, and that can be, you know, through internal teams or external advisors, however that comes. But heightened awareness. Are you going to do it internally? One, you definitely need to create an environment where people can feel like they can innovate and not get kicked out if it fails. And there's the concept of fail fast and lean methodologies. And so they're very important. And I think getting that throughout any business case, that using a lean methodology approach, which is really, you bring up what is the minimum viable product, which to achieve what it is that you want to do. So spend the least amount possible to at least get something and see if it works. Get people giving you feedback. And so iterate based on feedback. And then if you are going to look outside, and I would recommend to all organisations that regardless of whether or not you're great at innovating internally, you cannot build everything yourself these days. Working with the ecosystem is a critical part of doing business these days. So if you are going to work with the ecosystem and you're going to invest in companies, that's fine, but I would say don't dabble. So what we see is large corporates, often they'll make one or two investments in sort of smaller companies. And those investments, rather than being the result of any great strategic thinking, often come because of the power of personality of the person bringing the business case. So I'd be more strategic around the acquisitions that are made or the investments that are made, corporate venturing, and then really work on, as I talk about, the dating game part of working with these earlier stage and fast growth companies, which is, are there things that you can do which fall short of investing in them or buying them? And you can do that later on. But, you know, can you share IP? Can you get into channel arrangements with them? Can they be your distributor? Can you distribute them? API arrangements where they are able to use your technology platform to develop on. Doing a lot in the secondment world, so creating arrangements where you second employees back and forth to try to get that innovation DNA within your organization.
All right, well, let's go down a couple of levels. We've talked about the board level and the CEO level. What about the workforce? The shape of the workforce is going to, they're one of the things that's going to be disrupted first and foremost, I'm thinking. What's going to happen to them?
Yeah, so once again, if you look to PwC, they say that 5 million jobs in Australia are at risk of automation within the next 10 years. And I don't think that's an outrageous proposition. If you look at the way technology is developing, so the date at which the intelligence of the machines will equal the intelligence of humans was 2045, come down to 2030 just recently. So, you know, that's within foreseeable future. If you are an employee, I think now more than ever, you've got to focus on what is it that I can bring to my employer or people that will provide value to them. So I think people need to be brought up about their skill sets and how they apply their skill sets. And so you're seeing cases where companies are much more open to employees moonlighting because it brings that entrepreneurial spirit. So corporates actually having employees who have other businesses on the side. So that, you know, we're seeing a relaxation definitely in the way people see that. So I think critical to any employee is, can you be an entrepreneur within your organization, a so-called intrapreneur, and get ideas up that way? Or Can you do it outside your organisation, still keeping a day job, or should you actually move directly outside your organisation? But, you know, the one core thing about, retaining relevance is how can you help people? How can you add value to people? That is the critical thing for all of us to think about on a daily basis. What is it about your skill set that helps someone? Because if it helps someone, someone's going to pay you a dollar for it. And so, you know, it's rather than just going to work, you know, I'm working for the man and, you know, that's what I do every day. That sort of a mindset is going to be a dangerous position to be in as, you know, the technology makes those positions redundant.
Okay, well, if I understand your main theme, it's that companies, successful companies, need to have a clear strategy as how they're going to accommodate this disruption because it's going to happen no matter what. And we'll finish there today. Our guest today has been Nick Abrahams, partner at the law firm Norton Rose Fulbright, and we've been discussing leadership in disruptive times. You can get a copy of Nick's book by emailing us, podcast@amcham.com.au. And this is the business podcast of the American Chamber of Commerce in Australia. We value your opinion. If you're listening to us through iTunes, you can easily hit the subscribe button, leave a review, make a comment, all of which are very appreciated. We want to know what you want to know. What are the topics, the people, the issues that are of interest to you? Just email us, podcast@amcham.com.au. In fact, you can hear more of the podcast on the website, amcham.com.au. This is AmCham, bringing business to you. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the business podcast of the American Chamber of Commerce in Australia. This podcast is supported by VML. VML is a full-service digital marketing agency that can take you where you want to go. Everything we are is in everything we do. This is AmCham, bringing business to you.